Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job building Windows and web apps at the world's best companies as quickly as possible. In this lesson, we're going to talk about the lifetime of object references and how the .NET runtime manages the memory that your objects will use. And we'll talk about constructors, which are special methods that fire when you create a new instance of a class, like we learned about previously. And finally, we'll talk about shared methods and properties. So let's do this. We're going to create a new project called Object Lifetime. And using the technique we learned from the previous lesson, I'm going to add a new car class. So I'm going to right-click, select Add Class. We're going to call it car.vb. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add the four properties for the car class that we used in the previous lesson. I just have them already copied to my clipboard. I'm going to paste them in like so. Okay. And now what we want to do is go to the module1.vb and create a new instance. So I'm going to go dim my car as new car. And first of all, let me ask what you think is happening whenever this line of code is executed. Well, the .NET framework has to go to work. It has to create a spot in the computer's memory that's large enough to hold a new instance of the car class. The computer's memory has addresses similar to the street address of your home, where it temporarily stores values during the lifetime of the variable, or in this case, the object. The .NET framework creates a place in memory large enough for the particular data type, in this case, the car class instance. It takes note of the address of where it put that information, where it put that new instance of the car class. And then it serves that address back to you, the programmer, so that you can get to that information in memory anytime you want to. So where does it give you the address? Well, that's what this variable that we create, in this case, my car, but whatever we want to call that identifier, it simply holds an address, a reference to an instance of the car class in the computer's memory. So whenever you need to work with the instance of the car class, you just use my car, the my car identifier, and the .NET framework takes care of the rest. It gives you the illusion that you're working with the object, but really you're just holding onto a reference. You're working with the reference, okay? So an analogy that helps me understand references to objects in memory is the old bucket analogy that we've used before. So a reference is like a handle to the bucket. When you store an object in memory, .NET gives you, the developer, a handle to hold onto so that you can hold onto that bucket. If you let go of the handle, you'll no longer be able to access the bucket. The bucket will no longer be accessible. But why will it no longer be accessible? Well, the .NET framework runtime cleans up memory every once in a while by counting references. If we're no longer holding onto a reference to that instance of the car class, then it will remove the data that's stored in that spot in memory. And this process is called garbage collection. So you can do something like this, where we actually set some properties like we saw previously, and then I can do my other car as car equals my car. And now you have two references or two handles to that one object in the computer's memory. We've essentially attached a second handle to the bucket so we can use either one to retrieve the data that's inside that bucket, so to speak. So another analogy, think of it like a string to a balloon. After you cut the last string that's holding onto the balloon, it floats off into space and you can't get to it anymore, okay? Same thing is true with references to objects in the computer's memory. So as references go out of scope, in other words, the current thread of execution leaves the current code block, or those object references are set to nothing, then the number of references to the object in memory goes down to zero, known as the reference count. And at some indeterminate time in the future, the .NET runtime's garbage collection feature will go around and remove those objects from memory and free them up for other applications to use or for your application to use. So they, in essence, empty the garbage buckets out, and that memory can be used for some other purpose. So in this case, what we'll do just below this is go my other car equals nothing, and then my car equals nothing, and then there's other code here, okay? And so at some point, the object reference will be removed. Since we have set these, we basically cut ties or removed the handles to this new car in the computer's memory by setting these handles equal to nothing, to null, all right? So when will this happen? When will that actual object be removed from the computer's memory now that we've called nothing on both of the handles? Well, it happens whenever the .NET framework gets around to it. In some situations, this indeterminate period of time can pose a problem, especially when the object in memory is holding on to some system resource, like the network or a file on the file system, or holding access to a connection to the database. In these cases, you want to take a more deterministic approach to requesting that .NET remove those the object from memory immediately. So in these cases, you want to learn more about deterministic finalization in .NET. That's a little bit of an advanced topic. We're not going to cover that in depth here. However, a quick search on the internet for deterministic finalization will provide plenty of discussion about what it is and the scenarios where it will actually be useful and where it's important. Okay. So we're doing great. We're understanding more about what's going on in memory whenever we create new instances, how we can set a reference to nothing and essentially remove to cut all the references to the object. What happens when there's no references left? It gets removed by the garbage collector and it frees up the memory. That's all great. Let's talk about this line of code one more time. We've almost exhausted everything about it except this little open and closing parentheses operator. And we've talked about this for being the method invocation operator, right? Well, whether you realize it or not, you're calling a method whenever you create a new instance of the class. This method is called the constructor. It's a special type of method. It allows you, the developer, the option to write some code at the moment instantiation happens, at the moment when the new instance of your class has been created in the computer's memory. So constructors can be used really for any purpose. They're just a method, but you typically use a constructor to put the new object in the computer's memory into some valid state, meaning that you can use it to initialize the values of properties on the object and maybe even to perform some other logic that you have, all right? So a quick example of this, let's go back to our car class and actually implement a public sub new. So whenever you see public sub new in Visual Basic, think, oh, that's the constructor that gets called whenever we use the new keyword to create a new instance of that class, right? So let me just type a quick note here. You can choose to do this or just watch. You could load this from a configuration file, a database, etc. But in this case, I'm just going to hard code the make property of the new instance of the car class to Nissan for no particular reason. So me, again, I'm using the me keyword here to indicate this instance of the class, me.make equals the literal string Nissan. All right. So now, whenever we create a new instance of class, let me just comment out, let's comment out all this. And below here, I'll do console.writeLine, mycar.make, and console.readLine. So now, what would you expect to be printed to screen? The value Nissan. Where did we set it to Nissan? We didn't use the property. We didn't set any properties here in module one. Ah, it's in the constructor. We hard coded it and set it to Nissan. Again, typically wouldn't do this. You'd retrieve this potentially from some configuration file, a database setting, whatever the case might be. Or let's talk about what really is a more a use case that is more typical out in the real world. So we talked about overloaded methods previously whenever we were looking at the console.WriteLine method. I mean, remember there are like, console.WriteLine, and we saw there's 18 overloads for this method. There's 18 different ways to call that method. And the reason there are so many ways to call it is to make it flexible enough to accommodate all the different data types without having to call a toString on that given data type, or without having to create 18 different write line methods, write line string, write line integer, write line new line, or whatever the case might be, okay? So the flexibility makes it more useful without changing the core purpose of that method and without having to memorize 18 different names that essentially do the same thing, write a line with any data type that you have available. So you can create your own overloaded version of methods inside of your classes. We've already seen how to do that with helper methods. The same applies with your own methods that you create inside of your custom classes. And it's really easy to do. How did you do it when we worked with the helper methods? Yeah, you just change the method signature. In other words, you either change the number of input parameters or the data type of the input parameters, right? So, The method signature includes the name of the method, the return data type, as well as the number and the data types of the input parameters. And we'll just need to change those in order to create multiple versions of the same method. And what you can do is combine those techniques, the technique of overloaded methods with constructors, and you can create overloaded constructors. So let's do this. Let me get rid of that. And let's go back to our car class. And here we're going to create another public sub new. And this time we'll allow the user, the one who's creating new instances of the class, will allow them to pass in the default values that we want our new instance of the car class to be set at the point of instantiation. Here we go. Now that we have those input, we just need to do this. And so now whenever we attempt to create a new instance of car, IntelliSense, let's comment this out. So dim my car as new car. Open the parentheses. Now it shows us that there are two overloaded versions of the constructor. There's a version that takes no parameters, input parameters, and then there's a version that takes four input parameters. And so I can use, again, just how we always do it, use the arrows on the keyboard to move between the two versions in IntelliSense. All right, so in this case, I will use the second overloaded constructor to put the car, the new instance of this car class, into a valid state. So we'll do something like this, forward. Notice how it highlights the property as we move through and set that given property. Okay, now whenever we attempt to console.WriteLine, what will the make be? It's a forward this time because we used this version of the constructor, not this version of the constructor, all right? So what if we were to attempt to create yet a third version of this constructor and it had the exact same input parameters? Well, first of all, what's the point of that? And then secondly, the same rules apply to overloaded constructors that apply to all overloaded methods. When we attempt to compile our project, it will fail because the car class already defines a member called car with the same defines a member called new with the same parameter types. So again, the method signature has to be different. We could create as many different overloaded versions of our constructor as we want, or any method for that matter. but we just have to make sure that they're different, different number of input parameters or different data types. All right, so what happens if I don't create a constructor in my class? So let's comment out both public sub new and public sub new, the second one. What happens when we go to create a new instance of the class? Well, first of all, you can see that that no longer works. Let's go back to this. And will this application run? Well, it ran. We didn't have anything in our make property. Basically, nothing happens. What happens behind the scenes whenever we compile our code is that a default constructor with no input parameters and no method body is created for you automatically by the compiler. So you still, no matter what, you have a constructor. You still have to use the open and close parentheses no matter what. It just won't do anything. The implicit default constructor has no input parameters, no method body. It's generated for you at compile time. Of course, as we've just seen, by defining one or more constructors, you're merely taking control of the process of instantiation. Also, many times, classes that we'll work with related to building .NET applications don't require you to create a new instance of them. So you might wonder it odd how we were able to just do console without creating my console, dim my console equals new console, and then call the write line method. We've seen this in array.reverse back when we were looking at arrays, or date.now. How is it that we were able to call the now method of the date data type? Or how were we able to call this format method of the string data type without creating an instance of those data types first? Well, they just kind of seem to pop out of nowhere and are available instantly for us to utilize them. How is that even possible? Well, it's only possible because when Microsoft created them, they defined certain methods as shared methods, or they defined the entire class as a shared class. And you can create your own shared methods and classes as well. So just one quick note here. You might see the term static used. C# uses that term static. Most software development languages use the term static. If you hear that term, it's typically the same as shared in Visual Basic, okay? So again, our objective here at the outset is to help you utilize the .NET Framework class library. So just know that some classes you want to work with require you to first create an instance of the class, and others will be available to you as shared members of a given type, a given class. In other words, their shared methods will be available without requiring you to first create an instance like console.writeline. But just so how you can see how these work, it's really simple. You just add the Visual Basic keyword shared to a method. So in this example, what I'm going to do is create a second class, and I'm going to do it right beneath the definition of this first class. Yes, you can create multiple classes inside of a single file. Typically, however, you separate them out into separate files. But I just want to show you that this is possible, and it prevents me from having to go and create another file. All right, so here we go. And in this particular case, I'm going to create a public sub add to inventory, and I'll say by Val new car as car. And then inside of here, the body of the method goes here. But what I'll do is add the shared keyword to this method declaration. And now I can use this anywhere in code. So for example, I can go, my car. I'll go a car lot dot, see it shows up, add to inventory. I didn't have to create an instance of car lot. And I was just able to get to the add to inventory and just pass in my car to satisfy it like so. And we're not really doing anything with it at this point, but you get the idea. We were able to access add to inventory by simply using the shared keyword. So it's pretty easy to create a shared method in Visual Basic. What's a bit more complicated is to understand why you might want to create your own shared methods on your classes. And that would require a longer discussion of design patterns, coding heuristics. The why behind it is a little bit more advanced. I just want you to know that for now that you can use the shared keyword, that you'll encounter shared methods whenever you work with the .NET Framework-based class library, and you can pick up the rest later whenever you're designing your own code libraries. Okay, so in this lesson, we talked about the lifetime of an object, including what happens when there are no more references to an object in memory, and how the .NET Framework runtime employs the garbage collection feature to remove those objects at some point during the execution of the application. We looked at constructors, and we looked at overloaded constructors to put the object in a valid state before we're ready to use it. We also talked about the shared keyword and how to use it to create essentially utility methods, right, that are available without having to create instances of classes, and we've seen those many times using the various utility methods in the .NET Framework class library, like console.writeline, .readline, and so forth. All right, we're not done with classes yet. We've got a lot more to say, so we'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you.